This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Christy Schallenberger. When the liquor stores close under the state local option law, a large portion of the city's alcohol revenue will disappear, $500,000. That's how much the city estimated it would earn from alcohol taxes this fiscal year. KYUK's Gray Kim asked the city's administration how they plan to respond.
Acting City Manager Bill Howell says he isn't worried about the loss of alcohol taxes for this year.
So our budget year runs from July 1st to June 30th. So, I mean, we've got, you know, alcohol revenues coming in through January, I believe. You know, so there's about a half a year of revenues from that.
He says since the liquor store won't close until 90 days after the election is certified, the city will receive at least some of the projected $500,000 in revenue. Plus, the alcohol sales tax isn't necessarily going away. It's just transforming. Under local option, it becomes the alcohol use tax. It's a tax on the storage, use, and consumption of alcohol in the city. Under local option, if you ship in alcohol from Brown Jug in Anchorage, you'll pay the alcohol use tax to Bethel. And if you fly in alcohol in your luggage, you're supposed to inform the city's finance department and pay taxes on the alcohol you bring in. City Clerk Lori Strickler admits she doesn't know how this will be enforced. So there will still be alcohol revenue for the city. But as time goes on, Howell agrees it won't be as much as when the liquor stores were in business.
Going into the FY21 budget, I think that we're going to be taking a real close look at that.
But for this year, he doesn't anticipate having to make any changes to the budget. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
And tribes in the Bering Strait region are working to reestablish control of public safety in their communities using tools like tribal courts. Last week, tribes from around the region met in Nome to talk about what tribal justice could look like. KNOM's Emily Hofstetter reports.
Megan Sichovana-Topcock is a staff attorney at Kowarik and spent about a year organizing the three-day summit. She says the summit's goal was to help tribes understand what their options are for building a tribal court.
We've actually had a lot of people bring up the idea of doing a possible regional tribal court or developing a sub-regional model, or even if we did an appellate regional court, which I think helps us really pool our resources and make the best use of them. The advantages would be you could pool judges from different communities, so if you have a conflict of interest, somebody from another community could step in and be a judge or review a case if it needs to be appealed.
But what exactly is a tribal court? There isn't one singular model. As Tribal Justice Program Director for the Association of Village Council Presidents, Rick Garcia, explains.
Tribal courts are really our courts. They are courts in our community that seek to provide restorative justice to our tribal members.
And he explains that can look completely different from community to community. The attendees in the room ranged from elders to college students, all sitting at tables together and often mingling with residents from other communities, taking the chance to both socialize and swap ideas. Pens scribbled across paper as people listened to lectures from other state tribal leaders and legal experts in native law. Some elders, like Delbert Pangawi of Savunga, reminded the group that these ideas aren't new. Their communities have had systems of justice since time immemorial.
Sovereignty is a God-given gift to all of humanity, and that sovereignty cannot be taken away, not even by force. That's something we can never let go of. What we're doing now is getting back to our own identity, our own roots, and that we will accomplish. I have faith in that. Thank you.
Other elders, like Alice Fitka, recalled memories of tribal justice. Fitka grew up in Mountain Village, but is now the IRA president of St. Michael. She remembers going before a panel of elders as a little girl. She didn't recall why she was being brought before them, but remembers being told she was loved and in need of help, not punishment. Fitka worries that traditional tribal punishments, like banishment, might be too harsh for today's communities. The audience was hanging on to Ficca's words as she requested that cultural values gently guide solutions to modern problems.
We need to instill the values and beliefs in our tribal courts. Focus educating our young people who don't know that today. Even some of our adults don't even know these values and beliefs anymore.
Topcock, the summit organizer, brought in legal experts on tribal justice to discuss the basics of concepts like civil diversion agreements and judicial ethics.
And then I'm also hoping to go out to each community and start working with councils on developing a judicial code and also having community meetings, because you need to have community buy-in in order for tribal courts to be successful.
Topcock would like to see more conferences and workshops that allow tribes to go deeper into various elements of tribal justice that were only skimmed over in the summit. While similar summits have taken place for years elsewhere in Alaska, this is the first tribal justice summit in the Bering Straits region. Topcock says Kawerik hopes to make it an annual event. Reporting in Nome, I'm Emily Hofstetter.
Bethel has had its first frost in September of this year. It's not as late as last year, but it's still late. And that, one climatologist says, is the new normal. Just a few days late isn't that bad when you consider that last year, Bethel didn't see a frost until late October. That broke records for the longest growing season the town has ever experienced. Rick Toman, an Alaska climatologist, says 2018 saw more warm weather.
Well, last year, just the weather was such that, you know, to not get a freeze in Bethel until you know, after the middle of October requires, you know, more or less nonstop southerly winds. And this year we didn't, you know, that's not normal in any stretch. And this year we didn't get that very abnormal condition. So
105 days is the average growing season in Bethel. That's based on nearly 100 years of record keeping that started in 1924. This year's was 129 days. Bethel hasn't experienced an average growing season since 2000.
The new normal. Very short growing seasons of decades gone by just don't happen anymore.
2016 is still the benchmark for the warmest winter on record for Bethel, but 2018 came close. Temperatures averaged well above freezing. 2019 started off cooler, closer to normal temperatures, but February and March temperatures were well above normal, smashing records. February averaged 29 degrees Fahrenheit and March 30 degrees. Normally, February averages 11 degrees and March 15. Those warm temperatures had deadly consequences. 4 people in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta died driving their snow machines into open water or falling through thin ice on the frozen Kuskokwim River. Other communities experienced unusual flooding. Toman says these trends will continue. And finally, President Trump has signed a bill to exempt diesel generators in rural Alaska from an air quality rule. Village Power Utilities say the equipment needed to meet the so-called Tier 4 emission standard is impractical. They say the equipment causes generators to break down more and burn more fuel, two problems that are especially hard on remote communities. The Tier 4 emission standards are from a rule the Environmental Protection Agency adopted in 2004. They've been phased in gradually, greatly reducing the amount of black soot and nitrogen oxides allowed in diesel exhaust. Senator Dan Sullivan sponsored the bill to exempt rural Alaska generators from the rule with the support of Senator Lisa Murkowski and Congressman Don Young. Trump signed it last Friday. This is KYUK News. Thanks for listening. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Send your tips and comments to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for News Yukton coming up.